Nancy tells me that she had given you some a brief one-page thing that I had notes on forgiveness that I had written, and I don't know whether you've had a chance to look at it or not. But I think as long as you have it, I don't need to review all that. But something that Jack Kornfield often says is that the work, spiritual work, really begins with forgiveness. And that, for me, forgiveness really translates as letting go of the past. And forgive the past and let it go, because it is gone. And so it's as though, as long as we have regrets, as long as we have things that we feel badly about, things we did or didn't do, or whatever it may be, it's as though that gets in the way of our being able to experience love and compassion in the present. And what I'd like to focus on now, as I said earlier, it's really about love. And another one of St. John's quotes is that in the twilight of our lives, we will be loved, we will be judged by how well we have loved. And Frank Gostoseski often says that the question that people most often ask when death is approaching is, have I loved well? And certainly love means different things to different people. And sometimes when we use the word love, people automatically think about romantic love, but love is so much bigger than that. And love is certainly comes in many different forms. One of the treasures of love that I've come to appreciate more and more as the years go by is the love of friendship. It's just, if it's a really deep friendship, it doesn't really demand anything of you other than showing up, you know, paying attention, being there with another person, and other people are also willing to be with you. And also the sense of appreciating friends. When you get to be as old as I am, many of your friends will have passed away because they do that. And yet, I hope that if anything, it's just a reminder to express appreciation and gratitude for the friends that are still here. And one of the great, one of the best things about getting older is being able to share humor with friends. You know, so we can really laugh about the things that are inevitable, you know, like forgetting things or, that happens. I mean, it's not anything terrible. There's a natural tendency to not have the same sharp memory that we once had. But it's okay. There's much more forgiveness. And if somebody forgets that they were going to have lunch with you, well, it happens, you know? Don't have to be upset about it. Anyway, the sense of love, the love of friendship, and the love of children, I think the key to maintaining a love relationship with adult children, in my experience, is about letting them go. That you kind of have to let them go from the time they leave the womb. You want them to be independent. You want them to be able to make their way in the world. But that means that, you know, you got to let them get on the school bus and go away. Then they learn to drive. And that's a big letting go. That's a very hard one. And then they go away to school or to travel or whatever. They may or may not come around again. But I think that it's really important to let them be who they are. rather than maybe what you wish they were or thought they ought to be or something. And I think my sister, my older sister, gave me very good advice when my grandchildren were born. And she said, just remember to keep your mouth shut. And so I'm glad she reminded me of that because because they are doing things their way. And so anyway, I am grateful for that because I'm grateful for having a relationship with my two children and their children that is a great source of pleasure for me, although I don't see them very often, but when I do see them, it's a delight. So the letting go is so important in my book about that's what takes care of the obstacles to the awareness of love's presence in our lives, letting go of the expectations. So much of our anger is based on unmet expectations. Anger is so often triggered by thinking that somebody's not living up to my expectations. Somebody's not being the way I think they should be. And so letting go of the past means letting go of anger, letting go of resentments that we hold on to long after they're not relevant to us anymore. And being willing to look at what it takes to heal some of those old wounds in ourselves, whether it's about, if you need to make amends, maybe so, maybe it's just inner work. Sometimes you can make amends in your own inner world. And sometimes writing letters you don't have to send them, but just writing what you have to say can be useful, like in a journal or something. You may write a letter saying all the things you wish you had said, and then decide a couple of weeks later to burn it. Whatever you decide to do is okay. If it's something you want to communicate directly, all right, but if it's not necessary for you to do that in order to release it, then you're the only one who really knows what's going to work for you. But writing is a kind of emotional writing can be very healing. And so it doesn't depend on what anybody else does or doesn't do. Forgiveness is not about waiting till somebody says they're sorry. It's about letting go. Letting go of the expectations. And one of the tasks that we all have in life is to forgive our parents sooner or later. And as you mentioned, someone mentioned, it's too bad that they died before she was ready to say thank you. And I think that process of forgiveness is not something that you decide, well, I'm going to do it, and then that's it. But practicing forgiveness is a wonderful practice for having a more peaceful, joyous, serene old age. And as one of my teachers, Bill Thetford, who moved to Tiburon when he retired as a psychologist, he was one of the scribes for A Course in Miracles, and people would ask him, what are you doing in Tiburon? And he said, practicing forgiveness. It was a full-time occupation for him after he retired. And it was just, and I realized, what a profound teaching that was in itself, because we all have that work to do. We all have that letting go work. And the one thing that my husband and I often say to each other, there's nothing like an intimate relationship for giving you lots of opportunities to practice forgiveness. And a lot of times, if you have the intention of forgiving as letting go, that's good enough. You can at least say, I want to be able to forgive. I'm not ready yet, or I'll have some more work to do on it. But there's an intention that you can hold to move in that direction. So that paves the way, in a way. Forgiveness is the means of removing the obstacles to the awareness of love's presence in our lives. And When I was speaking with Ram Dass recently, you know, he was saying, well, he finds that he's really quite contented these days, and that he says, I find old age can be joyful, and joy gives life color. And this is wisdom, it's unhurried, and that by connecting to the joy in myself, I find the joy in everybody else. Our joy becomes something we share, and that helps it awaken in others. Real joy is deeper inside us than the happiness we get from external circumstances. And then there's the sayings of the Buddha that say, live in joy, in love, even among those who hate. Live in joy, in health, even among the afflicted. Live in joy, in peace, even among the troubled. Look within, be still, free from fear and attachment. Know the sweet joy of the way. What I'd like to invite you to participate in the next few minutes is a process where you'll need to sit with a neighbor, but you'll have to move the chairs around so that you're maybe facing somebody that you don't know very well or that you haven't worked with before. Maybe just turn your chair, maybe every other row can turn your chairs around and sit close enough so that you can really be with another person. And then if you'll do it in silence, then I'll give you some instructions how the process continues. Silence, and make eye contact with your partner for a moment, and then close your eyes. And take a moment to get in touch with your breathing, allowing your body to relax. Just noticing what's going on internally for you. Any feelings, any thoughts. Just allow yourself to enter the stillness that is somewhere inside you. And without opening your eyes, see if you can visualize your partner in your mind's eye. And if you have trouble visualizing your partner, you can open your eyes and look at him or her, and then close your eyes again when you've filled in any of the details you might have not noticed before, so that you can hold a clear image of your partner in your mind's eye. And see if you're willing for the next few minutes to give your partner your full attention. And if you're comfortable making eye contact, you can open your eyes again and make eye contact. And see if you can look at this person and imagine what he or she might have looked like as a very young child. And can you visualize your partner out in the world in that stage of mastery, really doing her assignment, whatever that might be, fulfilling his or her destiny? And think about your partner's inner journey, about the search for meaning, the longing for love. And can you visualize your partner in old age, coming to the end of life? And think about your partner's life, the whole journey that he or she has undertaken. And all the suffering that has come into that life. In childhood, all the hurts and disappointments. All the frustrations. All the challenges. All the broken dreams. Think of all the suffering involved in relationships that didn't work. All the struggles with engaging in the world. And all of the suffering that has come one way or another with the loss of loved ones, the loss of dreams. And if you haven't made eye contact with your partner, make eye contact with that person now. Think about what their struggles may be at this time. The uncertainties about approaching old age, the fears about getting old, the inevitable losses that come with age. The fears of dependency. The fears of approaching death. Of mortality. And you feel his or her pain and difficulty. And if you go back and see him or her as a child again, and think about all the joy that that child experienced in life, the delight of discoveries, of playing outdoors, of freedom. Of desire to be in the world, the desire to achieve and discover and engage with other people, and the joy of connection. Think of all the happiness that person may have experienced in their lives and all the loving kindness that he or she may have given to others. All those acts of caring, all those acts of service, all of the gifts that he or she has brought to the people that were important and to others who were not necessarily their closest associates, but people they cared about. All the caring, all the kindness, and all the love they've given in the world. All the compassion that has moved them to be of service. To do their work of teaching and healing in whatever way has been appropriate. And if you close your eyes again and just say a silent thank you to this person who is sitting here with you at this time. Thank you for all the love you have given. Thank you for bringing light into the world. Thank you for recognizing that our lamps are all illumined from the same source. They say those who seek the light are merely covering their eyes. The light is in them now. Darkness can cover it, but cannot put it out. And when you see that light in someone else, you're reminded that that light is also in you. So in a moment, I'll ask you to open your eyes again and just say thank you to your partner and share anything that you would like to share about this experience. So when you're ready, you can connect again. Thank you. I would very much like to have your responses to let me know what came up for you, what was stirred, what worked, what didn't work. Yes.
One thing that was, both my partner and I had a similar experience of the intensity of the feeling of the love I was given, that someone was holding me in the way that you were asking her to hold me.
Ah, so you liked being seen?
Well, it wasn't easy to relax and allow myself to be, but I got to focus on her, so
yeah.
When I didn't have to think about that too often, but now and then it would come and interfere, like, oh, she's giving me this too right now.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Right.
I just felt the enormity, the enormous amount of love my partner has given in her lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And how unaware we are of the enormity of love.
Yeah, yeah. Yes.
And that in the joy or in the pain and the suffering, we didn't know each other's stories.
Mm-hmm.
And the stories didn't matter. It existed, and we could witness it, and we could be present to it without engaging in the story.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
I just want to express an appreciation, because I've realized I often do that, but through judgment. And the opposite of loving, I see the differences in judgments. And here's another way to look at, wow, this person went through childhood as I did. They experienced love and suffering, and it's a path of forgiveness that is counter to what we often do in our judgments.
Mm, yeah, thank you. Yes?
To me, what you took us through is...
I can't quite hear. Could you speak up?
What you took me to was the human journey.
Mm.
And the human journey is so beautiful, and sometimes us caretakers want to take all the pain away.
Mm.
And that's a disservice.
Mm.
And it is the pain that makes the beauty.
Mm.
So thank you very much.
Thank you. Yes.
What struck me was the incredible intimacy and knowledge my partner had of my life journey without one word being spoken.
Mm.
Yeah.
No. Thanks. Yes. Good. Other comments? Yes.
We had a feeling of being sisters.
Ah.
A real strong bond.
Mm-hmm.
We shared.
Mm-hmm.
Deep share.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We had an awareness that all of the joys and challenges and all of that, which is part of the journey, really led us to the spiritual path to have some kind of context in which to integrate all of that.
Yeah. And the good fortune that you found a spiritual path. Not everyone does. Yeah.
For me, it was this recognition and appreciation for the willingness of that being to take on that particular unique path of expression of the divine, and just the sacredness of how their journey has been unique,
mm-hmm.
and to reflect that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks.
Sister as the same.
Mm.
It was a wonderful unity experience.
Mm-hmm. So it reminds us of what we have in common.
Mm-hmm. I was aware that while at first you asked us to hold the image of their face, and when you invited us early on to open our eyes, I did. And so I had her face right before me, and it was an interesting exercise to have the face and yet go beyond appearance. And try to go inside to the, of her and her experience to what you were asking that had actually nothing to do with what she looks like, but I am looking at her and kind of taking both of those things in. And I found myself, I knew absolutely nothing about her, and I wanted to have a story. I was recognizing the power of story as I was doing this, and I was kind of making a story and not wanting to make a story. And yet, I was loving her story.
Thank you. Yes.
I was just filled with a real sense of hope and joy at just this overwhelming sense of this person sitting in front of me, having made so many contributions and so much hope and so much richness. And then, you know, feeling around me this whole room of people and this whole world of people that we are living in. Because we get so caught up in the despair and the difficulty. And just to be there with someone so beautiful and experiencing all these things they may have done. And it was just really very hopeful.
Good. It reminds me of a piece from Tagore. I slept and dreamt that life was joy. I woke and saw that life was service. I acted, and behold, service was joy. Anyone else would like to say something? Sometimes it's good to be able to say something about your experience because it kind of anchors it for you.
I thought it was wonderful to have us walk through the stages. And I thought of the brilliance of creation that we start with so much gold, so much light available. So that it carries us, and I felt that shift then when we went into the stage of mastery, how we have to get down to it and bring that radiance into directionality and focus in order to serve, and then we move forward from there.
Yeah. Well, it is originally an exercise that tends to open us up to compassion and the understanding that we all share the challenges and the gifts and challenges of a life's journey, and that we're not alone. We think we're alone a lot of the time, but in fact it is a shared journey. And I know recently one of the questions I was asked to address for the Metta students was about how to deepen relationships with the people they serve. And it seems to me that the only way you can deepen your relationships with anybody is to deepen your relationship with yourself first. If you're unwilling to really deepen your relationship with yourself, then it's not going to happen unless you're willing to do that and bring your whole self to the experience. So if you're in denial, you know, that gets in the way. So how can you really be truthful with yourself? Recognize that the light in you is just the same as the light in everybody else. And sometimes it's easier to see in some people than others, that's for sure. But it does help to be able to remember that this person whoever it is in, sitting in front of you has also traveled their own journey. Yes?
You're saying that reminded me of the sense of this being also a practice to further enable me to be fully and totally present.
Yeah. Yeah.
Both the opening of the eyes and closing of the eyes just kept reminding me about how centered it felt to be totally present to that person.
Mm.
And then deeply listening
yeah.
to my heart.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yes, it's always been interesting to me how deep we can go in just a few minutes if we're willing to, one, be silent, and two, give full attention. Because so often our attention is sort of scattered all over the place, and how much can be revealed, and if we're willing to just be there, and so there's a way in which we don't do that very often. It's as though we wait until somebody says, you know, sit in silence and whatever it is, whatever the instructions are that enable us to be fully present and give our attention to something that is right in front of us. And also the other thing that I've learned from that particular practice is how much we are seen by another. We may think we have, you know, we present a certain facade, but in fact, if somebody wants to pay attention, they'll see right through it. They'll see, you know, the fact that we all have vulnerabilities and we all have hopes and fears, and that's it's so life gets so much simpler if it's okay. It's if you let it be okay to be seen, and then you can see others more clearly too. Because if you're trying to keep up a smokescreen of pretense or defense, it's very hard to see past that, to really see another person, another human being in front of you. And when you let go of all that, then people show up more. So if you want to deepen your relationships, you have to be willing to face the reality of mortality. We have a limited time on Earth. That we're all going to die, we just don't know when. But the reality is there. So we do have a limited time. No matter how old we are, we don't know. And so there's a way in which that being willingness to face the reality of the challenge, in the way I see it, is can we love wholeheartedly in the face of impermanence? Because so often we're afraid to love, knowing that every relationship is impermanent. Every relationship comes and goes. Either your paths diverge, or one of you dies. Well, that's a divergence of paths. So the problem of suffering is one of, as the Buddhists say, you know, a lot of our suffering is caused by clinging and attachment and being unwilling to recognize the reality of impermanence, that everything is impermanent. Even the things we sometimes feel will never change, they change. Change keeps happening, whether we resist it or whether we embrace it or whether we long for it or whether we fear it. It just keeps happening. So the acceptance of impermanence, I think, is really, really very freeing. And that the challenge is to love anyway. And now I like the words of Mother Teresa, who said, "You and I must go forth and share the joys of loving. But we cannot share what we do not have. That's why we need to pray." And, you know, in our circles these days, we probably would be more comfortable with saying, "That's why we need to practice." You know, it's practice. We have to practice forgiveness to remove the obstacles to love, and we have to practice being loving, being compassionate. And it is a practice, but I think sometimes we underestimate the power of prayer in terms of our inner work. I think it's very powerful if you really pray wholeheartedly. And it's not about asking for things. It's about giving thanks, practicing gratitude, and about recognizing that whatever your concept of God, that prayer brings you closer to God. So it's a more of an opening, entering into the presence. And so I think the best prayer, the one I like the best, comes from Annie Lamott. She says there's only two prayers you need: help, help, and thank you, thank you. So, you know, as they say, even an atheist who's under fire in a foxhole may pray. So it's remembering to say help, help when we need help, because help is always available, both in, you have inner resources and outer resources. But so often we don't avail ourselves of the help that's available because we're not willing to ask for it. So I think it's an important reminder that we all need to remember to ask for help, and we need to remember the thank yous too. The thank yous, that's back to practicing gratitude again. And certainly as we age, it's one of the things that really carries, it's one of the best spiritual practices I know. The two that go together is to practice forgiveness and practice gratitude. And those two together really do take care of a lot of the negative emotions that get in the way of our recognizing the gifts we are given, all the gifts that we haven't earned. They're just freely given, the gift of life itself. So we tend to take it for granted and hang on to it. But the other thing that I like to say about suffering in this context is that, you know, I learned from studying Indian philosophy that the root of suffering is ignorance. So in a sense, all of life is a learning process. And the older we get, hopefully, you know, is the beginning of wisdom. But as one wise woman said, you know, if you think you're going to be wise just when you get old, don't count on it. Because it really has very little to do with chronological age. No, we may know young people who have a lot of wisdom too, you know, but it's something that, again, I think that wisdom comes from a willingness to hold multiple perspectives simultaneously, so you're not attached to anyone, and to be open to learning, to remembering that our own ignorance is often the root of our suffering. And if the root of suffering is very much connected to forgetting who and what we really are, and also because we are afraid of the unknown. So often fear of death has to do with being afraid of the unknown. And yet there are, we've encountered lots of unknowns in our lives. How many times did we have to, you know, kind of step off the edge without knowing what was going to happen next? I mean, I think I did that in both marriages. I was married twice. First time I was 22, and I'm not sure I realized that it was really a leap into the abyss. and yet it was clearly, it was part of my path. And you know, for many years later, when I did get divorced, that was not part of my life plan. I never imagined that I would get divorced, but I did. And then now, in retrospect, there were no mistakes. You know, everything fits together. And if I hadn't been through all that, then my second marriage would not be working as well as it is. You know, because it's been very different, and in some ways much better, but on the other hand, my first marriage gave me two wonderful children, and that would never have happened. So there are many, many things that we just don't know what anything is for until a lot later sometimes. We don't know what those difficulties are for, and yet, you know, I think the hardest years of my life were when we're going through that divorce, both before, during, and after. And yet now that that was, you know, 30-some years ago, and I have no regrets, and I think we're all better off. Both my first husband and I both remarried eventually, and kids turned out okay, so, you know, much to be grateful for, much to be grateful, and hard times, but I'm sure that going through that made me a better therapist than if I hadn't faced that challenge. And so we don't know. When I was in the midst of it, I certainly didn't think there was anything good about it, but I wouldn't say it was a good thing, but it was part of my path, for sure. You know, I broke down all my stereotypes about how my life was supposed to be. And I guess we all have some of those ideas, and life never turns out that way. It seems to me that it just doesn't seem to work that way. So I do have a couple more things I want to share with you. These are just some of my favorites, just because they've been meaningful to me. There's one, this one is particularly good. It's from Confucius. At 15, I set my heart upon learning. At 30, I had planted my feet firmly upon the way. At 40, I no longer suffered from perplexities. At 50, I knew what were the biddings of heaven. At 60, I could hear them with a docile ear. At 70, I could follow the desires of my own heart because my desires no longer exceeded the bounds of what is right. So, and then more for approaching the end of life. I love this one by Tagore. I dive down into the depth of the ocean of forms, hoping to gain the perfect pearl of the formless. No more sailing from harbor to harbor in this my weather-beaten boat. The days are long past when my sport was to be tossed on waves. And now I am eager to die into the deathless, into the audience hall by the fathomless abyss where swells up the music of toneless strings. I shall take this harp of my life. I shall tune it to the notes of forever. And when it has sobbed out its last utterance, lay down my silent harp at the feet of the silent. There's so many different ways of approaching the end of life, you know. There's so many gifts that we have to acknowledge in terms of the many experiences that we've weathered and all of the changes and all of the teachings. One of the things that comes up for me often is the gratitude for all of the people in my life who have been teachers for me and who have given me gifts and who have taught me about love. Most important is to sometimes reflect on who are the people that really have taught you something about love. And it's not just, you know, by giving injunctions on how to love better. That has to come from the inside. How can you love wholeheartedly? It's in the face of impermanence. What allows you to be fully present and give your full attention and allow your loving kindness to flow forth? Because that is what deep down I think we all want to do. I like to say that in all the opportunities I've had for teaching in different cultures around the world, that I don't think I ever met anyone anywhere who didn't want to be able to give and receive love. And so often we don't recognize love when it's available. we think it has to come in a particular way or a particular package, and there's just there's so many opportunities that we miss to experience love if we're willing to do it without clinging and attachment. If we're willing to open our hearts and accept what is in the moment without trying to change it. The one is so. There's one more thing I wanted to share, but I'd like before we end, we have a few more minutes, and I'd like to invite any questions or comments or anything you might like to bring up for after our discourse.
I have a question, and it's to you, Francis. You became very involved in the very early days of the development of transpersonal psychology. And you've now witnessed that and what's behind that blossom in enormous ways.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever imagine that it would unfold to that degree?
No, I guess not. it's been an interesting journey. Mm-hmm. One thing leads to another. I can say that, but I think it was more a sense of for me when I was really feeling my dissatisfaction with just being at home and a housewife, and so I went to a conference at a Asilomar on. And it was sponsored by the University of California, and the topic was mysticism, psychotherapy, and psychedelic drugs. And that opened the door for me. That was an amazing, we don't think about the turning points, you know, but that was definitely a turning point. And then I thought back, well, I never would have been on the mailing list for that conference if I hadn't previously signed up for a correspondence course from UC Extension on child psychology, because I had two children and I didn't know what to do with them. So I took a course, a correspondence course, and it helped, you know. And so I was at home, and my husband was interested, so we went to that conference, and there I met Jim Fadiman, and I met Houston Smith, and Willis Harmon, and all those people who became lifelong friends. And then Jim Fadiman was the one who instigated, said, oh, you should probably like to go to Esalen, you know, and Esalen was just starting. This was back in 1965, if you can imagine. So we went to Esalen, and one thing led to another, and I met Tony Sutich and Miles Vick, and I heard about humanistic and transpersonal psychology. And so I decided maybe I'd like to go back to school and study psychology, keep my mind engaged. So I did. I signed up for a class. And it was the same year that my youngest child started nursery school. One class. And then another one, and then another one. And eventually, well, little by little, I eventually got a master's, and then I got a job in the counseling center, part-time counseling, and I thought, well, this is it. I've arrived. But then the person who was my boss in the counseling center, I thought, if he could get a PhD, maybe I could get a PhD. So I got some encouragement from some mentors along the way, and I did eventually end up. And then as soon as I got my PhD, then Jim Fadiman again invited me to come and be one of the editors on the Journal of Transpersonal Psychology, which at the time was, the journal was launched in 69, and this was like 73. And so there was just a handful of people who were interested in integrating psychology and spirituality. And you know, now it really is everywhere. I mean, even APA has gotten enthusiastic about it. And so one thing led to another, and then with the association, and we gathered people, and then Stan Grof started doing these international conferences, and he invited us all to come along, and so we got the ball rolling, and we really have had an amazing journey, and it's been such a privilege to be part of the unfolding of that whole movement, because it's all over the world now, and it doesn't really matter in my mind whether you call it transpersonal psychology or not, but the fact is that, you know, the whole appreciation of the spiritual life and the importance of connecting the inner life of mind and spirit with the outer life of service and action in the world is just so widespread. It's like what's been called the common work, you know, whatever path we take, we all need to connect the inner and the outer. And so that's just changed enormously. And so it's been very heartening to see the seeds we planted have, you know, sprouted into something that we could not have foreseen. But it was a matter of following the heart. You know, it was strongly what I was drawn to, what had heart and meaning for me, and the learning process, and working with colleagues whom I dearly loved. I mean, I think I was attracted primarily by people, and actually that wasn't so new. I remember as an undergraduate, I used to take courses from people I liked. I didn't know what I was going to do when I got out of college. As a matter of fact, I felt I failed because I didn't catch a husband, you know. Well, I graduated with lots of honors and stuff, but I failed to get married by the time I was leaving, so I had to go out and get a job, and of course, that was a very good thing in the long run. And I was afraid that maybe at 22, that was my last chance. So anyway, I learned better as time went on. So it's nice to be able to reflect and laugh about some of the serendipities and things that happened that I could not have predicted. So it's really been a great privilege to work with amazing, wonderful people in the world, and including Atum. Yes, I really am. I remember the first time we met, I think it was in Cambridge.
Yes.
There was an interview. Yeah, you came to interview me. And that was, and it's been a wonderful, wonderful friendship ever since.
Well, and also your support in certain passages of my life, especially when I'm so responsible in the Sufi order, I do not know what I would have done without
you. Oh.
I do not know. Because your capacity to allow me to have a space in which to find out how to hold the opposites of the enormous light in that and the shadow that always comes around the light was, I don't know how else I would have done it, so I'm enormously grateful.
No, thank you. Thank you so much. Well, we're very fortunate, all of us here today, you know, really are. And so it's like, hopefully I may have planted a few seeds that will make old age seem less threatening. Because there are gifts in all of it, and certainly I've received many gifts from those who have gone ahead of me. And we teach what we learn, and as best we can, we pass it on. So that's up to each of us to take it out and plant seeds wherever we can. And so I really thank you all for inviting me here today, because it's been wonderful to review some of these things. So I want to close with another. With my favorite poem. And I probably read it the last time I was here, because I read it at any opportunity. It's another one from Hafiz. I have learned so much from God that I can no longer call myself a Christian, a Hindu, a Muslim, a Buddhist, a Jew. The truth has shared so much of itself with me that I can no longer call myself a man, a woman, an angel, or even a pure soul. Love has befriended Hafiz so completely, it has turned to ash and freed me of every concept and image my mind has ever known. So, thank you.
Intimidated by